The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911. In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
This episode contains discussions of trauma. Listener discretion is advised, and please take care of yourself while listening.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Welcome to Scrambled. This is Nikki Shields. I'm here with my co-host, Chad Douglas, and this is episode Parenting a Sibling of Trauma.
Yeah, a few episodes ago, Nikki, we had somebody say something to me about it, or say something to us, since you are part of this as well.
I am here.
Yeah, of siblings of those who go through traumatic experiences, and she called them glass children because they're so breakable and people often look right through them. And that just pierced my heart with sadness. And I said, I know what we can do. We need to do an episode on this. And I have a friend who is with us for this episode, Nicole Wheatley. And she's got quite a story to tell of her two children. And I'll try to paraphrase it. And Nicole and I met when I was in the TV business, and her youngest daughter, Hayden, was diagnosed with a brain tumor at how old? Like 16, 18 months?
19 months.
Now she was 19 months old. And for all practical purposes, probably should not have survived that. I mean, the stories that we have shared on the news side of things, and Nicole was brave enough to share her story. And a few weeks ago, I ran into Nicole and Nikki. Both were, our kids were at a band competition. It was kind of cool that we all threw in into each other. And for me to look at Hayden in the eye at 8 years old now and tell her it was so good to see her. Oh my gosh, she's nine. See what happens? But to look that little girl in the eyes and say, it is so good to see you, meant so much to me, because she does not remember me. And you and I did several news stories together, but she was such a little thing that she, and I was telling my kids after that interaction, like, just what a walking miracle that little girl is. So she had that traumatic experience at such a young age. And then she has an older sister, Addie, who was around four at the time Hayden was diagnosed. So we said, let's get Nicole on here and talk about what it was like to parent both Hayden going through such a scary time, but also having that older sister who was at such a tender age as well. So with that being said, we're out of time. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us again. So where would you like to begin?
I mean, I guess it's probably good to start with what happened with Hayden, so you can kind of understand where, you know, my story started and went. Hayden was 19 months old, and over the course of 24 hours, our lives turned upside down. What I thought was a simple ear infection turned into brain cancer, and not just any brain cancer. It was a very aggressive, very rare form of brain cancer that I had never heard of prior to everything happening. And what turned into me going to a walk-in clinic to figure out why my daughter was stumbling all over the place and couldn't walk one morning turned into me living in Iowa City for 8 months with my baby every day fighting for her life. I mean, we went through a massive brain surgery where they prepped us that we would very possibly lose her, to the next day going into cardiac arrest 7 times, to the day after that developing pulmonary edema and going on life support, me and my husband both being told we needed to tell her goodbye. All of that happened just extremely fast. Massive stroke. They put her into a coma for 3 months. And then trying to fight the cancer. So that was just trying to get to the point where we could actually fight what actually was happening. So our lives literally just kind of flipped upside down in 24 hours. I honestly couldn't even, I don't remember a whole lot of how it all progressed, but I don't remember telling my oldest daughter goodbye that day. They put us in an ambulance. We went to Iowa City and it just kind of spiraled from there. So
I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's a lot. And that's been about 8 years ago. And I remember the first time we met, I went to Iowa City and Hayden had just finished, I think, a radiation treatment. and
yep.
we did the story, and then we did some follow-ups, and then we both did the St. Jude run and just really developed a friendship, which I cherish. Mm-hmm. And so then I remember saying to you after the fact, you know, years are like, I can't believe you agreed to meet with this TV guy right after your daughter's radiation treatment. But why was it so important to you to get Hayden's story out there?
We had just moved back to this area from Chicago, and I was just so overwhelmed by the love of small communities to essentially a stranger. Mm-hmm. You know, people around here did not know me, did not know my family. And, you know, all this happened. And, you know, like I said, just everything turned upside down. I had strangers calling me saying, where are your dogs? We're going to go get them and we're going to board them at this place for free. We came home. Our grass was always cut. Mail was always got, like, there was never, we were never concerned about our house or our stuff or, you know, any of that kind of thing because we just got taken care of. And, you know, my daughter was in school and the teachers coming up to the hospital saying, what do you need? You know, we've got your oldest daughter, you know, what can we do for you? Parishioners of our churches paying off my tuition that year.
Wow.
Just all these things that happened that I wanted to express, you know, number one, gratitude towards those people that had done so much for us, but also to show like, we're okay, we're going to fight this and we're going to do okay because we have all of you behind us. You know, so that was a huge part of it, but also just because I think there's this, and I think every parent thinks it's not going to happen to me.
Mm.
This doesn't happen to me. This doesn't happen to my people, my friends, my family. This is a little kid on a St. Jude commercial on TV.
Yeah.
And so I think that bringing attention to it is literally in your backyard. And unfortunately, it is happening constantly, and the lack of funding. And there's so much that I just think you just don't know because you always think it's not going to be me. It's not going to be my family. Mm-hmm. And just one day it is, you know, it's my kid didn't have cancer until she did.
Yeah.
And then it became all of our fight. So,
yeah. A couple of things I just want to point out and then I'll get off. It's not necessarily a soapbox. It's just, I think it's just good for people to know. One, Hayden was treated with a treatment that was developed by St. Jude. She was not well enough to travel to Memphis where the campus is, but because St. Jude shares their research all across the country and world, folks in Iowa mm-hmm. City were able to give Hayden that treatment because of St. Jude. So, that's a very important organization to your heart. It's a very important organization to my heart because of you. And the other thing I want to learn or teach everyone here is what I learned in doing that story with you and other families that did a whole series with me on kids with cancer was that less than 4 cents of every dollar donated to the National Cancer Institute, less than 4 cents goes to pediatric cancer research. Great organization does the research, but I mean, we're literally putting adult levels of poison into the babies to get them cured. And so that's what we learned. And that's why I say, not necessarily a soapbox, but I'm going to get off of it now because we're going to talk about trauma. Nikki, do you want to chime in?
How am I supposed to follow that? Actually, Nicole, you look like you were going to say something when he was talking just a minute ago. And I just wondered if you had a thought or a comment or something.
So Chad was mostly right about like the treatment that she received through St. Jude. So with her cancer being as rare as it is, and a very high recurrence rate of her type of cancer, it's about a 40% chance that it will come back, and it will come back very aggressive. So St. Jude is trying to prove that by adding chemotherapy to her form of treatment, that it lessens the chance of it coming back. So we were getting treatment at Iowa City. And yes, Chad's right. She was much too sick to travel. We tried to get her to Memphis and it wasn't possible. We did all the radiation, but then we were given the option to take chemo on top of radiation to hopefully stop it from coming back. And that's a hard decision because it's like, well, I'm not an expert on chemo. I know that chemo is poison essentially. And we had, you know, just a few days to make a decision of whether or not we wanted her to go through chemo or not. So it's, do you take the chemo and that kills her? And how do you live with yourself from that? Or do you not do the chemo and the cancer comes back and kills her? And how do you live with yourself for that? So we're in a really tough spot in trying to become experts and make phone calls and do research. And Dr. Google is a horrifying place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where St. Jude came in, is they offered us that option of chemotherapy to add to her treatment. And it ended up being, I mean, in my opinion, a great, wonderful thing, because we're 7 years out and it has not come back. Awesome. So that's, I mean, St. Jude shares their research all over the country, like Chad said. And, you know, that's why, you know, a lot of people think, well, if I give money to St. Jude, then they only treat those kids at St. Jude. That's absolutely not the truth.
Yeah.
They're fighting for every single one of us.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
So traumatic, right? We can all agree that there's been some trauma here with this family.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it sounds like you had many, many supports. I mean, I love the examples that you gave of people were taking care of your yard and people were paying things and taking care of tuition and making sure you had what you needed. And I think that's wonderful. And like you said, that's, I don't know if it's unique to a small community. I've always lived in a fairly small community, but we see that when tragedy hits or when terribly difficult life situations occur, people do tend to come together to help others. And that's wonderful. Was there anything that you needed for your daughter, like looking back, your four-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you were busy all day, every day, thinking about things, worrying about things. And yes, you had a lot of help and support, but I'm wondering, like, what was this experience like for your four-year-old? What do you think she saw and felt and heard when all of this was going on?
I think at her age, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of, why is mommy not home? Why is daddy not home? And this was 3 weeks before school was done in her first year of preschool. And so we pulled her from school because we needed her to be with somebody. And my parents fortunately live about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes away from us. So the best option was to send her with them, to stay with them. So, you know, here we are pulling her out of school. She's going to live with grandma. Mom and dad are home. She doesn't have her dog. You know, I'm assuming at that time it was just a lot of confusion, mm-hmm. because I was gone for over 8 months. My husband was gone for the first month. And I mean, we didn't come home.
Wow.
You know, I'm sure that she felt very abandoned and confused.
Mm-hmm. Did she talk about that at the time? Like, did she show signs of being upset or, you know, concerned about her sister or concerned about mom or dad?
She did. A lot of it was in kid talk. You know, mm-hmm. I remember the first time she saw Hayden after her surgery, and she has, you know, a very large scar all the way up the back of her head, and her head was shaved, partially shaved at that point. And I remember Adeline asking me why the doctors cut her head off. You know, I mean, that was her, that's what she thought, you know, that Hayden had something bad in her head that we had to get out. And so she assumed, well, they cut her head off and they took it out. And, you know, at the time, that's crushing that that's what she thought. It was funny at the moment in time when we're like, no, they didn't cut her head off, but it's just, it's hard. And we tried not to let her see Hayden for the first 10 days or so, because she was intubated. Mm-hmm. And we knew that was going to be confusing, you know, and then on all that time, she turned four. So then we planned a birthday party in a hospital, and that's tough, you know? And, but that's another thing about a small community. The birthday party that showed up in Iowa City was massive.
Oh, wow.
You know, the nurses decorated Hayden's room. We ended up taking her to the mall that's in Coralville. There was a bike that showed up. There was more toys than I can imagine. There was a cake company that made a customized cake for her that day. So, you know, it was amazing what the community did, not just for me, for my husband, for Hayden, but for my daughter as well.
That's really cool. How much of Hayden's story or Hayden's illness at the time did you share with your other daughter?
Not a lot. You know, she obviously knew Hayden was very, very sick, but I don't know that she ever understood how severe it was. Because I remember having a conversation with my mom the night that she went on life support, and they essentially told us that she was more than likely not going to survive that. And I remember having a conversation with my mom is, how do you tell a four-year-old, yeah. Well, she wasn't even four yet, how do you tell a three-year-old that her sister died? You know, yeah. how do you even have that conversation? And I remember just those thoughts going through my head as well.
And I don't know, I'm sorry you had to go through all this, because there's so much to this story, and we're only like 15 minutes into the episode, but I'm like, you know, you mentioned within 24 hours how much your life was turned upside down, Then you have mm-hmm. a daughter who you were told to come say goodbye to that she probably wouldn't survive. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a little girl who has a birthday and you want to be there for her. You have a marriage you're going, you know, it's just like all this stuff. And you're just, I'm sure parenting Hayden, who's in the hospital, just on cruise control. Like you're just doing what you need to do. You're in that mode. But then you have Addie who's over there and needs the mm-hmm. love and attention. I'm curious if you ever, before we started this, had you ever heard the term glass child when it came to something like this?
I had not. I think that's something that you never think of until you're actually in that situation. Because who wants to think of that?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what do you think of that concept?
It's extremely accurate.
Okay.
Extremely accurate. Because, I mean, just as time has gone on, I can remember conversations now that probably at the time didn't trigger me as much as they maybe should have. But I can remember when we came home, you know, the gifts that showed up for Hayden, the opportunities that showed up for Hayden. And I remember Addie saying to me at times, why does everybody want to know who Hayden is? Why does everybody want to talk to Hayden? And at the time I just explained, oh, you know, she's, you know, people know her story with cancer and stuff. But at the time, like, how awful, like she's right? thinking that everybody wants, why not her?
Yeah.
Why doesn't, you know, and I still sometimes question myself that I didn't handle that well. And still to this day, there are things that I do that I, you know, rethink that, go backwards on that, because Hayden still to this day gets a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. She's known around here as a miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to know the little girl that's a miracle. And, you know, we do the St. Jude run and it's very focused on Hayden. And, you know, Adeline does get left behind sometimes, but I think Addie's not probably the best example of what that is, because Addie is extremely well-adjusted. She's extremely mature. You know, we've not had to do therapy
at all.
There's probably times we should have.
None at all.
We have not.
Wow. Even though Nikki is a therapist, but like, that's impressive.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a really,
still need therapy very much.
I can understand that.
It is something that I have told myself many times that it's something that I would benefit from.
Sure.
But I do the typical, I don't have time for that. Yeah. That's my problem. Right. But Adeline, the one thing that she does every year that has been really good for her, she goes to a camp of all kids that are siblings of cancer patients.
Awesome.
That is put on through a dance marathon. And that is a 1 week a year that all these kids are the star, not their siblings, not the cancer. They are the stars. They are doted on. They can talk freely about their feelings about it all without feeling judged by mom and dad or their sibling, or feeling like they're, you know, discrediting what their sibling went through. And I think that honestly has been extremely beneficial to Adeline, because we sent her there when she was like six.
Wow.
Which was horrifying to me to send this, you know, my child there. But I was assured by many cancer moms that this was something essential that our children needed.
And she still goes.
And she still goes.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
Do you remember, we'll take it like maybe a year or two after Hayden was out of the hospital. Did you ever do anything, or what did you do to make Adeline feel special?
With Hayden's situation and her being still very medically fragile for a long time, I mean, she still to this day requires oxygen at night. Mm. And, you know, there still is a lot that revolves around Hayden. And there's still times when I need to remind myself to do better. As she has gotten older, I try harder to do things one-on-one with her. You know, she and I have had talks, you know, does Hayden's situation bother you? Do you feel like, you know, mommy and daddy abandoned you? Like, I mean, we've had those conversations. And generally the answer is no. But Addie has made comments multiple times over the last 8 years that Hayden's the favorite child. And that's really hard, mm-hmm. because I've explained that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Hayden has just needed me more. And that's a hard thing to understand at her age. Or, I mean, any child shouldn't have to feel that they don't need their mom and dad as much as their brother or sister. But that's the ugly truth of having a medically fragile child. Mm-hmm. It's just Hayden needs me more.
Yeah.
Hayden has therapy. Hayden has appointments. Hayden gets stuck with needles all the time. Hayden just needs me more.
Yeah. Especially at this point, you know, of her life. you know, might get to be where they're older and Addie needs you more than Hayden will. So if it makes you feel better, my kids pull the same stuff. So there's always the favorite. And I
know that's a common thing. And I can remember, you know, unfortunately for my sister, I was always the favorite.
Oh.
But, you know, but we joke around about that too, you know, that, oh, well, you were the favorite child. I mean, I think that's pretty common in every family, but Adeline actually has a reason to feel that.
Yeah.
Way. It's not the truth, but.
But how do you convey that?
Right.
You know?
But everything she's seen or experienced feels that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as she gets older, she understands that more, but. I mean, that just crushed me when she when she said that to me.
Absolutely. And you sit there and look at, you know, when I think when any subsequent child is born, there's always that jealousy of the older one of like, oh, the baby's getting all the attention. But this was that to the nth degree of the amount of attention that was.
And her world had to turn around, you know, right away, immediately for a long period of time. But it sounds like you addressed it with empathy and, you know, you and the community and family made efforts along the way to make sure she wasn't that forgotten child. And so, you know, it sounds like she has fairly age appropriate, normal reactions to, you know, stuff like that. So that's really great.
Well, Nikki, while you're here, what else can you add to this that if the child isn't as well adjusted as it appears Addie is, and what can you tell parents of those with siblings of a traumatic event of how to help them process that better?
Well, so, you know, I was thinking a little about this subject in advance of this episode, and
that was smart of you.
Yeah, I know. I do that sometimes. Chad doesn't like to do that.
I don't, so.
But there's lots of different ways that a sibling can grow up with a sibling experiencing trauma, and it could be, you know, something as serious as a sibling has inflicted, you know, some kind of trauma on that sibling, right? Like some kind of violence or aggression. It could be, you know, a little more passive in that maybe the sibling just has behavioral issues that, you know, impact the other child. It could be, you know, like the way the child's treated. Maybe it's a blended family and maybe those relationships aren't super strong. And so there are different treatments towards each child in the family. And so that can lead to some trauma. So there's lots of different ways. Or you can have medical emergencies and medical illnesses, and you can have losses, and you can have all kinds of things that lead to a child, you know, experiencing some version of somebody else having trauma. And ultimately, the key is to recognize it, to, you know, give that child a voice. Make sure that you're hearing that. Don't, you know, if they come to you and they say, you know, that they feel like you love the other child more or whatever, don't squash that. Don't say, that's not true. That's not true. Talk about the why. Like when you said, you know, well, right now it's because she is needing more. And that is just, you know, give them a reason for those kinds of things. And that can help take that distorted thinking and kind of minimize that so that they feel a lot better in that space. Make sure that you have time with the other child, right? You want to make sure that you know, I realized during, you know, the 8 months that you were away, you had one single priority, which was keeping your daughter alive. And so that makes absolute sense. But once things calm down, having time with the older child, you know, goes a long way towards helping that kid feel like everything is okay. And so it's recognizing whatever the thing is that triggered it. So if it was an abuse situation and you know that it's happened, keeping that child safe, getting them away from the person that's inflicting that can be very, very hard on a family if you have to separate a family because of abuse that takes place between siblings. So that's a different kind of trauma. We could probably do a 9-hour episode on that alone. But when you look at, you know, kids who have been through, you know, just kind of watching their child grow up with behavioral issues or a mental health diagnosis that causes a lot of disruption in the family, it's very easy for those kids to just sort of fade into the background and be quiet because the other child does take up a lot of the attention, a lot of the family energy. And so it's recognizing that and stepping back and not personalizing. I think as parents, we don't want to fail, right? Like we don't want to let our kids down. And so it's easier to be like, oh, everything's fine, than to go, wait a minute, hold on. Is there something I could do that would help the situation be better? And then, you know, this seems pretty generic. And like we've said it in every episode, but ask for help. If you're not sure if your child is doing okay, connect them with someone, you know, get a counselor, school counselor, social worker, talk to your doctor. There's lots of different ways to assess if a child is handling something well or not, or if they might need additional help. And there's nothing wrong with asking for help.
Nicole, are you able to answer this question because Addie was so young, personality was just developing, but do you feel like she was the same kid after this, or do you feel like she did have a personality change?
You've met my husband. She's a mini version of him.
Well, there you go.
She's the class clown. I can't really say that there's been a behavioral change as much as her and I feel have kind of gone through the ebb and flow of just kind of being annoyed with me as mom more so than dad. And I feel like we kind of hit that early, and I attribute that a lot to the fact that Addie had to grow up really fast.
Yeah.
You know, she has an understanding of life and death more than most 11-year-olds should. You know, she sees what having a child who she knows the other shoe could drop at any time. She knows that that's a fear that we have with her. We talk a lot about like if that bothers her or if that's a kind of a lasting effect that she has as well, just kind of, you know, worrying if it's going to come back. And she says no, but I think Addie is the type of child that will do anything and everything to minimize any stress that I have, knowing that I already have a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing about Adeline, is that she is so compassionate and she is so empathetic towards everyone. But sometimes that's bad, because then sometimes I think she covers up feelings to protect others. And I think that is 100% because of what she's been through.
Yeah. I think kudos to you and your husband for, it sounds like you guys have had very open conversations with your kids. Have you had any conversations with Hayden about kind of the same topic? Obviously it would be a different conversation, but has there been any conversations with her?
The interesting thing about, so because of treatments, because of the stroke she had, because of chemo, because of radiation, because of just the brain tumor in general, Hayden does have learning disabilities. And sometimes that's kind of a blessing and a curse, because yes, learning disabilities are very hard to deal with. And we've had to change expectations of her versus Adeline and things like that. But it's also kind of a blessing, because she doesn't pick up on things the way a lot of kids do. Like, she doesn't realize if she's not cool. She doesn't realize if she's not part of the in crowd. She just doesn't get that. And it's kind of a blessing.
Yeah.
Like I've said multiple times, reaching the age where like that's a thing, like to be cool.
Yeah.
Hayden doesn't see that. She just is. And I don't know that that stuff quite registers with her. The only thing that she picks up on a little bit more these days is, why can't I spend the night at people's houses? That's her hot topic at the moment. And it's hard to explain. Well, I can't let you go to somebody's house that doesn't know how to hook up a oxygen machine and a pulse oximeter and isn't going to have a monitor on you all night and wake up.
Right.
If your machines are going
up. Right. Or if the power goes out, what you do to, you know, exactly, go to the backup tank and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So she doesn't understand that. And that's kind of right now her sticking point is, why am I different? Why can't I do the things that I let my oldest do? You know, and that's a hard conversation, because I don't know that we'll ever be there. I don't know that she'll ever be able to spend the night at somebody's house other than someone that I know and knows her in and out and, you know, everything like that.
But is she allowed to have friends at your house?
She is. And that goes okay, but she still, and then that's the other part, that is her friends have known her since all this happened.
Yeah.
So there's not usually a question of, why does Hayden have these machines that make funny noises? You know, they pretty much all know that, but it is, you know, she gets a little embarrassed when there is somebody new that asks questions.
Yeah. And you said nine.
She's nine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all that self-consciousness does start to develop, and you know, but it sounds like your family has really just had the approach of compassion to all of it. And it sounds like your older daughter is very compassionate, and there are strengths that can come from growing up with siblings who have experienced medical trauma or other types of trauma. They tend to just be more aware of other people's needs. Or like you said, she's very good at recognizing when other people are struggling or carrying a lot. And so that is a strength she'll take with her into her life. So yeah, really hard things can come out of it, but strengths and strong characteristics can come out of it too.
That's why I think that Hayden, or maybe Addie's not always the best example to use for trauma, because I find that I see almost the better aspects that have come out of it. Just the fact that she, you know, she loves hard. She's super protective. She's very mature. I remember just blow up fights with my little sister growing up. I mean, just they don't really fight. Like, I mean, it's just, I see so many good things that I also think came from our situation.
Yeah.
So yes, there's absolutely terrible bad things that I hate, but I see Adeline being so much of an amazing human because of what she's experienced. I see how she treats kids with disabilities. I see, you know, we have a beautiful little girl with Downs at our school. I just see how she treats her just like she would anybody else. Like, she doesn't focus on the difference. It's kind of how to just be more inclusive with everybody. And I think that you don't get that unless you have a sibling who you kind of have to make that normal in your life.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think my vision for this episode was, you know, for parents who do have the siblings with trauma, of like tips to help them. But I'm like, looking at the bright side of things, like there was some positive things that came out of this.
Absolutely.
And like you said, that makes her a better human being that she'll carry with the rest of her life. You know, you can't take away empathy. I don't, can you, Nikki?
No, I hope not.
I'm still looking for it.
I think Addie's going to do really big things because of what she's experienced.
Yeah.
I would agree. Well, what advice would you have for parents of two children maybe entering a similar situation to what your family faced, or some other type of potentially traumatic event for one of the kids? Like, what advice would you give other parents facing something like that?
I think that we were age appropriate, honest with her. And I'm glad that we took that route and we didn't minimize what was happening, but we also didn't give too much information. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we did not sugarcoat anything and that we were very transparent with Adeline, because I think that gained trust with everything going on. I feel like she trusted us more because she knew she could ask and we would tell her and not pretend it wasn't happening. I would say, you know, talk to your kid. Communication is huge, but also be honest. You know, it's a scary thing to talk about. But I think kids deserve to kind of know what's going on as well. And I'm glad that that's the approach we took. And have your core people that can pick up in your absence. Mm-hmm. And trust those people, you know, that you love to take care of your baby. Because I could not have done it on my own. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I did have people that I could trust to take care of her. And so, you know, that's, let people help you.
That's a big one.
That's, I love that, because it's one thing that I've learned through therapy too, is talking to your children as humans. They're very smart and they can pick up on things that I don't think you're capable of. And anytime I have somebody reach out to me in person who might listen to this podcast or something, it's like, that's the best advice I can give them, is just talk to them and have that conversation. Yeah. And that's the other thing I love that you said, is like, let people help you. Because I think people are so prideful, myself included, that's like, nope, I can do it. It's okay to ask for help and to let those people help. Because people, when they offer, and it's always like the throwaway line of, like, if there's anything I can do, to, you know, let me know. Give them something to do. Because if they're saying it, they truly mean it. Or just do something nice for them. If you're on the other receiving end, like, you know, bring them a meal or do something nice to show that you're a caring person and you're there for them.
And that was something I really had to work on with myself, because I very much, so before this all happened, we lived in Chicago for 7 years and had no family up there at all. So I learned to take care of myself without needing anyone. So all of a sudden I needed a whole lot of help. Yeah. And that was hard for me to not just ask for it, but to be okay with it, you know, and to trust that people were going to do things in my best interest without having to ask me, because I had no brain power left to make any decisions. So essentially it was, mom, here's my 4-year-old. Told my sister, here's my 4-year-old. Just take care of her, you know, and to know that I didn't have to stress about that, because I knew 100% that they would do what she needed.
It's a big deal to be able to trust other people in that way. Yeah.
Sure. And that included, you know, a pool over the summer and all kinds of things that she needed. You know, a little spoiling wasn't a bad thing.
No, it was not. It was not. Nicole, we can't thank you enough for this. And just a quick update, since we've talked about all this stuff, how are the girls doing now?
They're doing really good. So it's always interesting. And I know probably, Chad, you know some of this, but, you know, they essentially told us we don't know what situation you're going to have when Hayden gets better. She could be extremely disabled. She could be in a vegetable-like state. We had all these things told to us, you know, worst case scenario, which of course is what they have to do. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not upset at all because they really have to prepare you for that. But I'm happy to say that we're, you know, three quarters into her third grade year and she's made honor roll every quarter.
That's
awesome. She's not been held back. We do a lot for her as far as getting her what she needs. She's still in speech therapy. 8 years later, she's still just recently out of occupational therapy. We do horseback riding, which is kind of her physical therapy. I hire a tutor in the summer. So, I mean, we make sure she has all the tools she needs to be as successful as possible, knowing that it's going to be a challenge. So, I mean, I'm so incredibly happy. And then my oldest, God knew that I needed Adeline for sure with everything that happened with my youngest. She's a straight A, brilliant student with needs little to no help from me for anything. Just such a kind child, has a great relationship with God. And just, she's just such a great kid overall. I couldn't have been more blessed with the two complete opposite children that I have, but they're exactly what I needed. And I just, we're just really blessed.
It sounds like they get along.
They do. They get along. I'm just, they'll bicker.
Sure.
But if anybody else would ever mess with Hayden, watch out.
Mama Bear probably comes out of Adeline, doesn't she?
Adeline, I mean, honestly, I fear the day that that happens because Adeline is also 3 years trained in jiu-jitsu.
Oh.
it won't be good. It won't be pretty. We've had to tell her multiple times, like, you know, we only use jujitsu in the gym.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. But yeah. That brings up another point though, of doing something physical probably helps deal with processing that trauma.
Great outlet. Yeah.
The last time I saw you in person, like I said, was, it was so great to look your little girl in the eye and tell her. It was so nice to see her. And you talk about speech therapy and stuff. I mean, she looked me back in the eye. We didn't have a deep conversation because she didn't know who I was. I was just a stranger, but she talked to me and everything. And it made my heart feel warm. And so, so happy that you were able to share her story with us for this episode and help some parents out. Like when we first met, it's like just talking about it and keeping that conversation open with the public and letting it know that, you know, sometimes bad stuff does happen and it's how you deal with it and everything. So we cannot thank you enough. And I'm sure some of our listeners are just as thankful. So thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thanks for having me.
As always, we do appreciate your 5-star reviews and ratings. I guess the 5-star ratings, the nice positive reviews are always nice too on Apple Podcasts. Our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you.